Happy New Year. Thank you. Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here, welcome you back to the spring semester of Thursday Morning Roundtable. It's great to all see you here. I hope you had a good break, a lovely January, and you are ready for a full and very informative season of TMR programs. I do have a few new members to introduce to you, but first, one of our returning members, many of you are famous, but one of you happens to be on the cover of this month's CNY Woman, Michelle Jones Galvin. Congratulations, John. Michelle. John, her husband John is here. That's great. Good to see you here. Also, I have not only new members, but today I have a new person to introduce to you, and I hope you will join me in congratulating a new U.S. citizen, James Michael, our WCNY Tech. Doing any handshaking or hugging today because I have a cold, but I want you to know that James on January 12th was naturalized as a U.S. citizen. He comes to Syracuse, or he came to Syracuse several years ago from the Sudan by way of Kenya. He is a TV master control engineer at WCNY. He's a graduate of Cayuga Community College. He is a husband and a father and just a great guy, and we love having him here every week, and we're just so happy for him. So congratulations, James. Okay. New members, someone you may remember from before, Charlene Smith returns to us as a TMR member. Frank Ridsey of both CNY Community Foundation and Lemoyne College. Frank, where are you? There he is over there, Frank. Judith Height of OnCare. Where is Judith? Judith is over there. Raise your hand again so everyone can see you. And Heidi Holtz. I don't see Heidi here, but she's often, I'm sure she'll be coming in. I'm not going to read you all of their there's Charlene over there. I'm not going to read you all of their community endeavors because you know that if someone is a TMR member, they are involved in the community. So I invite you to get to know them. We have a full, as I said, a full month, a full semester of programs. I will just say that one program that we will not be having is we won't be having the program on the Syracuse Philharmonic that I had promised you in December when we canceled it. I don't think that one's going to happen this semester. But next week, we will be talking with Peter Vogelaar, who is head of the Mohawk Valley Resource Center for Refugees. And we're going to be talking about refugee resettlement. In general, Utica is really known as a national model. And one of the reasons that we're talking about that, other than that it's a very interesting topic, but the Onondaga Citizens League is going to be launching its new study very soon, and the topic is going to be on refugee resettlement and how we can be a more welcoming community. And so that's going to be our kickoff. So I highly recommend that. Right now, though, it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest speaker, someone that we all know, someone who has been on this side of the podium before, and that is Matt Driscoll. As you know, Mr. Driscoll was 52nd mayor of the city of Syracuse from 2001 to 2009. During that time, all of his energy and sustainability initiatives helped to earn us the title of the Emerald City. When he left the mayor's office in December of 2009, he was named president and CEO of the New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation, and it is in that role that he comes to us today as a representative of the governor to talk about the proposed state budget. So thank you very much, Matt.
Thanks, Sandra, and good morning, everyone. It's great to be here. On behalf of Governor Cuomo, thanks for setting some time aside for me this morning so that I can talk about the governor's budget, which he released just this past January 17th, as I'm sure many of you know. You know, I want to talk a little bit before I get into the program about what I think has been, and I hope you would agree, a very historic year last year. Actually, the governor's first year, I think really we finally saw someone who really came in and for the first time in a long, long time, in a very bipartisan way, really moved the agenda for New York State forward. So whether you're Republican or Democrat, Assembly or Senate, people came together and really got the business of the people done. And at the end of the day, isn't that what we always wanted, is to really see things get done? That is the commitment of the governor this year, to continue that same spirit of cooperation, to work together, to not go it alone, but to really have tangible results for all of us. So that's what this budget is all about, because it's more than just a financial plan. It really is a reform plan. Before I go, can you all see that in the back? Can everybody see it okay? Okay. So, as I talked about, you know, the executive budget plan, of course, was rolled out initially, but this is a different type of budget because it builds in some heavy lifting. It builds in a reform plan that is going to center around four other areas: economic development, reimagining government, mandate relief, and the education crisis that has been plaguing New York State for many, many years. And I think the genius of this program, quite honestly, is set aside the financial plan, is really how the governor is creating a platform for New York State to move forward, not only for today, but building that for tomorrow. And that's what the what you'll hear about. But let's start with the financial plan and balancing the budget. Of course, as we all remember last year, there was a $10 billion budget that we all faced. The governor did close that with no new gimmicks, no new taxes, no new fees. That's the same commitment that we'll see again this year. In December of this past year, again, the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor came together and created the first tax reform that's happened in a long, long time. And presidents from Reagan to Obama have all said the same, which is when you reduce people's taxes, you help stimulate an economy. In fact, so in cutting those middle class taxes to the lowest rates in 58 years, so back in 1953 was the last time that the tax rate had been adjusted. I know nobody here remembers that because nobody here was born around 1953. But that was back when Tom Dewey was governor and Jackie Robinson actually was playing second base for the Brooklyn Dodgers. So it was a long time ago. But when we talk about the budget this year, you know, much of it because of last year's efforts has already been set. And built into the budget this year is the 4% for education and 4% for Medicaid. And then SUNY CUNY had come together and they are looking at a 2.5% to their budget with a spending cap on the state of 2%. But that leaves what we have talked about, which is a $2 billion deficit. So, you know, the obvious question is, at any level of government, is how do you close a gap? Well, again, the governor is going to continue the same principles established last year, no gimmickry, an honest budget, no one-shots, no new fees, and certainly no new taxes. You know, the governor likes to talk about reality-based budgeting as opposed to Albany-based budgeting for two of the largest areas, which have been Medicaid and education. Long-time, very expensive programs for all of us as taxpayers in the state of New York. Last year, I think many of us learned, perhaps for the first time, that there were unsustainable growth increases built into those formulas. And I think that came to light, and I think many of us were kind of surprised that we didn't know about that. This year, the same deficit exists in part because there are still other growth inflators built into the law as well, and the governor is going to be attacking that. So, and moving forward with formulas that are more tied to the operation in terms of performance and outcome on programs and services to serve, of course, the people of New York State. This year, the governor is going to eliminate all of those additional extra inflators that I talked about. So let's talk about the $2 billion budget deficit that kind of looms out there. Just in state agency operations alone, from years past, we were scheduled to receive about a 4.5% increase. That, of course, is not going to happen. It'll stay the same as it's been. So that will allow $1.3 billion to be set aside. If you look at aid to local municipalities, again, from a formula from several years ago, it was purported to be 3.9% this year. It will stay at 2.6%, and that will carve out $756 million. So if you look at, you know, the $1.3 billion from state agency operations and the aid to localities of $756, there's your $2 billion right there. And actually, if you look at the budget as a whole, it's actually been reduced by another $225 million this year. In fact, of the last now two budgets for this governor, both of them have been less than the one he inherited. So his budgets are decreasing. So the budget is manageable, but the tough part, as you can see here, is going to be the reforms and the proposals that the governor is instituting to change the platform of New York State. So let's talk a little bit about economic development. Again, the question is, how does government spur private sector job creation in a tough economy while, of course, limiting spending and maintaining that discipline that all of us expect? The answer, of course, is public-private partnerships and leveraging our state tax dollars to maximize those benefits. Here's an example of a program, a very creative program, the first of its kind that I'm aware of, at least across the country, in terms of dealing with infrastructure. No new issue to any of us in this room. When we hear about, you know, pipes breaking and roads in tough condition and bridge repairs. This year, the goal will be to improve more than 100 bridges, 2,000 miles of roads. That's like going from New York City to Buffalo five times back and forth. Finance upgrades to 90 municipal water systems, that's what my agency does, improve 48 state parks and historic sites, and repair about 114 flood control projects. You know, here in central New York, we were very fortunate. This past summer, in August, Hurricane Irene and Tropical Storm Lee hit, and for the most part, we were spared. But I can tell you firsthand that the folks along from the Hudson Quarter, from Essex County in the North Country all the way down through, we're not. The devastation is just incredible, and it's very difficult to describe what has happened to people and their homes and their businesses and whole communities that have been devastated. And so there's a need to really address the infrastructure in that particular region, and I'm glad to see that the governor is doing that. So how does this work? Well, the New York's Funds Works project will take $1.3 billion of state funds, which is actually $723 million in new capital, and roll forward $600 million in existing capital. That'll be the portion that New York State will put on the table to leverage $1.7 billion in federal funds, combined with authorities who have the ability, as you can see here, to contribute. From the private sector, there'll be $3 billion worth of investment, and that'll total up to about $15 million worth of investment on $1.3 million from the state general fund. Much has been talked about, certainly the governor's talked about, how do we stimulate the economy. In 2010, $50 billion was generated in New York State from tourism alone. And so the idea is, how do you grow that pie? Because when that kind of revenue comes into New York State, we all benefit. The governor has proposed, as I'm sure you all know, building the nation's largest convention center. Anybody who's ever been to the Javits Center knows that it's not only old, but it's outdated. As a matter of fact, it's the smallest of the major convention sites across the nation. New York State ranks dead last in that. So that is going to, as you can see here, have about 3.2 million square feet of convention center space. And that's important because if we want to compete, not just nationally, but internationally, because we all know New York State is a global destination, we have to have the facilities to do so. But there's a catch, and that is that there will be no state tax dollars invested into this project. The private sector investment will be $4 billion, which will also be the gaming portion of Aqueduct, from private sector companies, not using New York State, our tax dollars, to help stimulate that. There will be no state investment, aside from administrative costs, into this project. The energy highway. This is something that is hugely important, not only for today, but for tomorrow. The governor smartly wants to look at how that system works now. It does not work well. Like most infrastructure in New York State, it's very old, and it needs to be built for the future. Currently, in the western New York reaches of New York State and right through our area here and certainly up into the North Country with Quebec Power, there is ample opportunity to redesign the system and not take energy needs and consumption from the areas that I just mentioned, but to help support the downstate economy. New York City and that surrounding metropolitan area is always skating on thin ice in terms of the energy needs that they have. The governor is going to be issuing an RFP to go out and solicit private sector companies to rebuild the energy highway system. About a $2 billion investment on the private sector side, no investment on the state taxpayer side. Casino gaming, this is another widely discussed, I know, in this community issue, but confronting, frankly, the reality is it's been here for many years. One of the things that, you know, I've learned is that there's 29,000 slot machines in New York State. We actually have more than Atlantic City or any other state in the Northeast. It's been here for a long, long time. We know it. It certainly has an impact in our communities. But the idea is, how do you harness that and make it beneficial for local governments and local communities? And that's what the governor is proposing. It's a $1 billion projected revenue source for local and state governments. By privatizing this, it will consolidate the racing and waging and lottery to develop a more accountable system in terms of how that operation would move forward. So it's really a pro-growth strategy that leverages a small amount of state money. I talked about the $1.3 billion, which really helps ignite a lot of private sector dollars into New York State. And that really does help create a lot of jobs and, of course, commerce and revenues that go along with that. Reimagining government, another very important area that the governor wants to tackle. The SAGE effort is really addressing the very foundation of government from agencies and right through administrative functions as well. The government, frankly, hasn't been designed. It's evolved, like many things in life. If you look at back in 1927, you may have difficulty seeing this. This was Governor Al Smith's executive branch government back in 1927. This is what it looks like today. So it's been very problematic, and clearly there's some housekeeping to be done. There's a lot of redundancy and overlap. It is not efficient, and in some cases it's not effective. There are thousands of programs, of course, in the state, and every year dozens more are passed by the legislative bodies. Again, compounding programs and policies and duplicating services unnecessarily. So if we want to be smart about how we operate state government, we need to look at those and reduce them so that we are more single sourcing programs become more effective as well. This is an example here of some state programs. 13 agencies administer 91 job training programs. So 13 different agencies have 91 different job training programs for tall people, for short people, for everybody in between. Here's the Department of Labor alone. They have 40 job training programs. So clearly, you know, there needs to be some consolidation done here and some more modernization of those efforts. In the housing end, 40 programs alone just from housing and community renewal. So reevaluating the functions of government across state agencies also means that people are being held accountable. Everything is on the table for this governor. Looking at very successful and proven programs like CityStats or CiraStat programs, which frankly work. And I'm pleased to hear that that's some of the ideas that are on the table for state government as well. The governor will submit a plan to eliminate, I mentioned those, frankly, thousands of outdated laws and programs and consolidate the functions so that we can be more effective operationally. Next, to cap and control administrative costs and executive compensation, the state, of course, contracts with thousands of vendors. It's a big state. New York State alone can't do it all, so naturally the state contracts with many folks across the state and the nation to deliver services. The range of administrative costs in government contracts ranges anywhere from 3% fair to about 50%. So 50 cents of every your dollar, in some cases, supports these functions. The compensation packages range anywhere from $50,000 to over $1 million that your tax dollars support. This is a stunning example of a downstate early intervention program that receives 99% of public funds, as you can see here. The administrative cost of $3.3 million. And if you look at the CEO's compensation, it's $2.2 million. So clearly, there's an imbalance that exists that needs to be addressed. Mandate relief. I think this picture says it all. Stop taxes from going through the roof. Isn't that what we all want? This has been a very much long discussed topic. It's nothing new to any of you here in this room. Everybody wants it in concept, except nobody wants to do it, because there are folks that don't want to do it. And I talked about the heavy lifting early on, and there are interested associations and groups out there that, frankly, you know, want to fight against making sure that mandate relief and these other aspects occur. Medicaid is a major cost driver for counties. Right now, all told across the state, all counties in, it's about an $8 billion bill for counties. Back in 2005, the state capped the amount of growth because it continues to grow every year. And in beginning in 2006, it was at 3.5%. And as you can see here, it ended up at 3% where it is right now. So counties have a 2% property tax cap that was passed last year. And, of course, you can see they're still capped at 3% growth on Medicaid. So obviously, the governor gets it. There's an imbalance. There's a delta. So he's going to take it a step further, a lot further, candidly, by proposing to save over $1.2 billion over the next 5 years. The state of New York will absorb that growth going forward. Medicaid, obviously, is the number one mandate, and number two is pensions. It's another issue that plagues local governments and is expensive. Here's a snapshot of from 2009 to 2015. Projected increases of about 185% in terms of the pension cost for local governments and schools. And if you even go back even further, the number widens. It's been a growing cost for communities across the state for years. Governor's proposing to create a new Tier 6. It's more like the private sector. It really follows the TIAA CREF model. The employee would be vested in the system in 1 year, as opposed to now, if you are hired by the state, it takes 10. It's mobile. If you only work 2-3 years, you can take it with you. But it's also far less expensive. The contribution rates are higher, as you can see here. The contribution rates are 4%, 5%, and 6%. The employer and the employee share in the risk and the rewards. And the language excludes overtime and other payments from final average salaries. It's 50% cheaper than Tier 3 and 4 right now. So it's a lot less expensive, more like the private sector, and it really will be more affordable for the state of New York taxpayers going forward. No current employees' unions will be affected. This is all about the long term. This is kind of building that platform for making New York State more competitive in terms of its cost, not only for state, but for local governments. Next priority mission, I hope we all would agree, is education. There's frankly been a crisis in education. It's really moved more from the kids to the adults over the many years. Governor wants to change that. When you talk about return on investment, we're number one in New York State in terms of our tax dollars, what we spend for public education. Unfortunately, our return on investment is not good. We're 38th. In that. I don't know about you. I don't mind spending that kind of money, but I would certainly like to see a better result, as does the governor. So you have to change the thinking, because the performance for the student is necessary, and of course performance for you, the taxpayer, is also very necessary. Changing the dynamic from a process-driven program to results, from the systems to individuals, not about salaries and pensions, but about rates and test results, and away from a bureaucratic system back to the core mission, which is the student in the classroom. Last year, the governor began to change that paradigm, and he created a competitive grants based on performance. In 2010, New York State was successful, you may recall, in the Race to the Top program from President Obama, and we won $700 million in that competitive grant program that was offered by the federal government. But there were strings attached. And part of the strings were you had to have an evaluation system. Unfortunately, for the majority of the state right now, we do not. And so we risk losing that money. The federal government contacted the administration a couple weeks ago and said if it's not done, they're going to take that money back. So as I talked about, there's no evaluation system in place. We could lose the $700 million in funding, which will essentially wipe out the 4% increase that I talked about at the top of the program. So the governor is going to take action, and let me just give you a little background here, because really what's going on is this. State Ed is required to devise a plan for performance evaluations, and they did so. And when they released it, they were sued by NYSTAT. So they're still in court. The only people that are faring well are the lawyers. The governor has said if that does not get resolved, then he will resolve it. He will step in and he will include a 30-day extender with his own evaluation for New York State school districts, all 758. If districts do not, what they need to do on the local level and what has been done here in Syracuse is they have come to an agreement. So the state ed has to devise that platform, which they've done, and local districts have to come to agreements. And I'm pleased to report here in Syracuse they've done that. But for those that don't, districts who do not, by next year at this time, they will be ineligible for that state aid increase. So if we're serious about education, we have no choice. And clearly the students don't deserve any more, and all of us deserve no less either. In closing, this really is about a pro-growth strategy on fiscal discipline, real reform, and an entrepreneurial government to lead us to a new New York. And, you know, I want to carry a bit of a message here because there is a message here. The governor wants people to get involved, just like you all did last year. Myself and other members of the cabinet traveled across the state talking about not only the budget but policy items as well. And people got engaged. Why? Because people have been frustrated for so many years that things weren't happening in New York State government. Your voices really made a difference. And that is the same effort that the governor is carrying this year. He really is a bottom-up person. He wants the public involved. There'll be opportunities. There'll be charrettes as an example on the mandate discussion. I don't know the locations. I'm certain there'll be somewhere in the region where people like yourselves and groups and associations will have an opportunity to come and have your voices heard. Why is that important? Because it's important for the Senate and the Assembly and all the elected leaders to hear what people really think. You can also go online on the SAGE website or the governor's website, as thousands are, and make your ideas and your thoughts known now. So the governor wants your input. It's very important to him to do that. And you have a voice, and you need to use it. And so having said all of that, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today on behalf of Governor Cuomo. Thanks for listening, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that I can. And before I do that, I meant to introduce someone who is also with me today, Juanita Williams. We want to give a wave. She's the Central New York leader here for the Department of Labor. So she's the main contact here in Central New York. Thanks, Juanita.
All right, thank you. Certainly a lot of issues that we've talked about over the past months and years with Medicaid and pensions. Sarah, also I wanted to congratulate Sarah McElvain was recently appointed to the Mayor's Citizen Review Board. I left that out at the beginning. Is that Citizen Review Board?
Matt, one of the problems with a program a governor has sent out is that every local community has a special exception to why they can't do that. What type of commitment can you give this community that you will not be the water boy from Syracuse to Albany for the special interest groups?
Are you talking about a specific program or just...
We could just say something like some of the housing programs, for example. Syracuse has over 7 housing programs inside the city. Each one is very special, and God forbid nobody else could do as good of a job as they're doing.
Right, exactly. And every community feels the same, of course. Well, first and foremost, I've never been anybody's water boy, and I don't intend to start now. So that's not going to happen. Certainly the governor, I can tell you, let me tell you about this governor, who I've had the privilege to know for many years, as certainly when I was mayor, I worked very closely with him when he was the attorney general. He's a man of his word. He is someone who comes to Albany every day and rolls his sleeves up and goes to work hard. And trust me, we all work very late hours. So there will be no special arrangements. There will be none of that. The governor is asking to do this in a bipartisan way as he did last year. And that means Republican, Democrat, Senate, Assembly, people coming together and devising policy and program that is going to change the dynamic of New York State. I don't think there's anybody in this room that would disagree that New York State has been headed in the wrong direction for a good many years. You know, the world, the global economy has changed. Everything has changed, and so too must we. And in terms of a business operation, you know, New York State needs to adjust itself on how it manages itself, manages your tax dollars, and is more accountable to you. And so I'm very confident standing here today to tell you that the governor is a man of his word, and he'll stand by that.
I know this isn't your portfolio. Education isn't specifically your portfolio, but I'm curious if you have any insight on this. I know that the governor's proposing to basically increase the competitive grants practically tenfold this year in the next budget and take that actually out of the 4%. It's part of the 4% increase as competitive grants. And do you have any evidence or do you have any information about how effective the current grant program has been in terms of leveraging positive outcomes for schools, particularly high-need districts like Syracuse?
No, I do not. The number that you cite is about $250 million, I think, that will be carved out from the 4% for the competitive grant process. But what I do know, and my experiences here, are that when you have a competitive situation, it really it gets people to work together to devise a better product and what we all would hope would be a better outcome. There's a lot of work to be done. Certainly the educators, not only here in Syracuse and across New York State, I think, you know, do a great job. But there is also a need to change the way things are done. And that's the hardest part in any level of government is, you know, doing something different than you have always done the same over many years. That's what the governor is attempting to do. The competitive process worked wonderfully well in the Regional Economic Council. There was some of the same debate about that early on, and I think here in Central New York fared very, very well. You know, it brings people together. People who may not normally be speaking with one another or work collaborating with one another in the spirit of cooperation and that competitiveness, I think really produces some good ideas and some new kind of methods. And so I'm hopeful that that will continue, and I think it will drive the spirit of people to be more creative.
I'd like to go back to Sarah's point about the 2% property tax cap. It is perceived by a lot of people to be a joke because of the number of waivers that have been passed. The only real way to achieve savings in property taxes is going to be consolidation, particularly consolidation of schools at the countywide level and towns and villages. Has there been any movement or discussion, I should say, by the governor in some effort to either come up with a carrot or stick approach or combination?
Yes. Well, the governor, when he was the AG, actually had legislation passed allowing for the dissolvement of small communities. So, and that has worked. In fact, I was just in Seneca Falls. That's a community that took advantage of that. But the reality is that, you know, that discussion happens in a room like this, and it happens in the communities themselves who look at, you know, those opportunities and say, do we want to move on this? Camillus, as we all know, recently, you know, debated that issue and decided not to. There is an opportunity to do that. On the 2% property tax cap, you know, just to say, there is a mechanism built in, and I think you pointed that out, that communities can override that. The answer, though, is why? It's because what the governor wanted to do was to make sure that local residents were more engaged in that. So as we know, as a city council, as an example, would require two-thirds of those members to override that 2% cap. Or in the district, the school district, it would be 60% of the voting public. And the reason for that is to get people engaged, to make sure that the public is more aware that potentially your taxes could be increased. It absolutely did that.
The property tax cap debate stimulated a lot of discussions across the state of New York, and people are far more engaged. And I know that we have focused on the communities that have overrode that, but there are far more that have not. And so it's really made people more aware and more engaged in their local communities. And I've traveled a good deal of New York State and seen, you know, the results of that effort. But clearly, when you talk about a 2% cap and you've got a mandate as an example, you know, the governor recognizes there's a delta, and that's why New York State will be absorbing in the Medicaid side the growth, be about $1.2 billion, excuse me.
I just also wanted to point out that next month, I think on March 22nd, the state controller, Tom DiNapoli, is going to be here talking to us, and I know that one of the things that he will touch on is the 2% property tax cap, because those waiver requests are coming through now, as well as pensions and other issues.
When you were mayor, you went to Albany often, every year, seeking increases in our school budget, a school grant from the state. You have mentioned many things that are very worthwhile that are going to even things off, but one of the troubling items appears to be that the base for the education grants to the communities is based on something that happened decades ago when Long Island, particularly, and Westchester received very high grades or very high amounts compared to upstate. What change is going to be made in the distribution of the money from the base standpoint so that people are starting from the same platform?
Let me say that I can't answer what changes will be made, but the CFA is still clearly an issue that needs to be settled. That's the funding mechanism, you know, that distributes school aid throughout New York State for perhaps wealthier communities and less fortunate communities. That issue still needs to get addressed. There's no question about that. And so, you know, what this whole program does is really open up, I think, and broaden the discussion for how New York State moves forward in terms of not only education, Medicaid, and other tough discussions, and in terms of how we fund these and what the expectation is on the local level. Look, it's no secret that certainly myself, those before me, and certainly those today have some frustrations in terms of the budget and in local budgets. As an example, here in Syracuse, when I was mayor, for every dollar that the city collected in property taxes, 71 cents of that dollar went to the school district. 29 cents of that dollar was used to fund police, fire, codes, and everything else on the administrative side. So, you know, that's a challenge for communities. And so how do you make sure that those dollars are being the most effective that they can, and at the end of the day, that those dollars are satisfying the core mission statement of schools, which is in the classroom and educating our children, as opposed to administrative cost or otherwise. The fact of the matter is this, ladies and gentlemen, everyone needs to be more creative, think differently. This is a different environment in which we lived and have lived over the course of the last 10 years. And certainly, as it pans out going forward, I think, you know, it's going to dictate the communities that are successful and that are not. But the governor certainly and clearly is a supporter of education. We all are. But certainly wants to make sure that that return on investment that we spend is producing results for us.
My question isn't directly related to the budget, but it is something that I think will have ultimately some influence on the budget. The governor, when he ran, he promised a really strong reform in the redistricting process. How goes the battle?
Well, if you've read along recently, it doesn't seem to be going well. You know, the governor's been very clear. He said he wants an independent commission. He has made that very, very clear from the start. And as we know, the Senate and Assembly just released a plan. The governor has suggested he's going to veto that. So it's not settled, doesn't appear to be, and certainly will be heading to the courts. And I think, candidly, the pressure is on, you know, the folks who are running for office this year, you know, because you have to have elections. But the governor's standing by what his commitment was to have an independent commission, Clyde.
Don't have the redistricting done, that everybody in the House of Representatives would be running statewide?
I don't know that. I've not heard that. No, I think it's the same scenario that you have to have the line. You can't run an election without having lines. And so, you know, it needs to get done. And so if it's not settled outside of the court system, and at this point it's not, I fully expect, of course, the judicial system to settle that and to draw those lines.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to put on your current hat as the president and CEO of talking about environmental finance. I think it was a year or so ago that the state legislature passed the smart growth legislation. That's not the actual name, but the fact that infrastructure improvements would have to try to apply smart growth principles, and we had the smart growth administrator here. Can you tell us how that legislation and how those principles come into play when you are looking to help communities?
New York State Environmental Facilities Corporation. Long name, amazing results. I'd like to be able to change that because it's too much to say. But what we do is we do all the financing for infrastructure, for clean water, drinking water. We do a lot of green innovation, GIGP program for communities. We do it for cities, towns, villages, counties, and private sector people as well. So we finance infrastructure. And as part of the smart growth legislation, our charge, and we have been using the smart growth legislation since last year, is to ensure that we are not creating a sprawl situation, as an example. If the drinking water line, if the town of Camillus, this is just an example, wanted to add a drinking water line out into a farm field off of Route 5, it would be highly unlikely that they would qualify for financing from EFC. However, there is a growth component of that legislation that also needs to be considered, and it's one that I argued for. That if you're in a community, let's say you're in a village or a city or a town, and you have a challenged area of that community, and you want to rebuild that system, that needs to be considered as an economic benefit to that community. Yes, one could argue that there may be additional hookups that could come from that, but it's important for the state to also make smart investments and try to drive investments back into particularly urban areas or developed areas, and to not to be a part of the sprawl issue, which is problematic. And so we have some flexibility, but it goes through a rigorous process from DEC through my agency, and there's a host of others in projects that they deal with. I'm speaking specifically to my agency, that we review carefully. I sit with my Smart Growth Committee folks, and we go over all of the projects that come in, and because ultimately I sign off on them or not. And so we are very careful on the review of that. And it's good legislation.
So have there actually been any that you haven't signed off on because of smart growth considerations or changes, or they make changes or...
Yes, we have had discussions with folks, expressed some concerns, and people have gone back and put pen to paper and kind of redefined their projects, and then they would be accepted.
Any other questions? We're boggled by the budget. Well, we have talked a lot about some of these issues in the past, and I won't say that we're jaded about, but we do see some progress. I have a question for you. I don't think you're going to be able to answer this one, but I'm going to put it out there. What can we do? We've had in the past, we've had the current attorney general here. We've had past attorney generals, but one. We've had a different Governor Cuomo here. What can we do to convince Governor Andrew Cuomo that it would be a good thing to come and talk to the people at the roundtable in Syracuse?
Well, here's the start. Since I don't sit that far from him, actually, at the cabinet, I will carry that message and ask him if that's something that he would consider. I'd be happy to do that. I'd like to tell you a little bit more about what perhaps we do now, and you know what EFC does, and what we've done in this area. We're very active and engaged in the Syracuse area, certainly with the County of Onondaga, with the Save the Rain program. The financings, we just did a financing with the county for $32 million for the trolley lot project there. The city of Syracuse, when I was mayor, we did the Westcott Reservoir, and of course, as I hope you know, and I talked a little bit about the green innovation and the grant program, was really one of the first projects of its kind to utilize microturbines and solar to essentially get that project offline. You know, for personal reasons, I'll admit I've been proud of that. But more importantly, folks across the state and the country have asked me about it. The EPA has used it as an example of how communities can think creatively, reduce energy consumption. You know, moving water is very expensive. 3% of all national cost for electricity is used just in the movement and treatment of water. And in local levels, it can add up to nearly 30% of a local ratepayer's cost for energy needs. So, you know, we're trying to not only educate, but we're trying to inspire communities to think about when they do projects, how do they do them smarter for the long haul and that are less expensive. So St. Joseph's just had their ceremony the other day, I believe. You know, we helped fund the green roof that was on there, and there's a reason for that. Not only have they been a terrific neighbor, of course, and all the great things that they have done over the years in that particular neighborhood and on the north side, but that matches up well with the efforts that the county is making in terms of how stormwater runoff impacts our sewer system here in Syracuse. And so those are the types of things we do. We work with communities across the state of New York, and it's really fascinating work, I have to tell you. And particularly now, you know, when you talk about stormwater runoff, which is something I can assure you, you know, 15 years ago, people didn't even talk about, and certainly energy consumption. We focus really in these two areas, smarter stormwater management techniques, the impacts that that has on our roads, not just our infrastructure, but then also energy and how do we more smartly consume energy and make it certainly more affordable for the taxpayers. So we're very engaged in this community as we are across the state.
As you travel around the state, I mean, you know, just, I don't know whether because you are former mayor of Syracuse you would get a different perspective from people, but are you surprised in any cases by how people view Syracuse, either positively or negatively? I mean, how do they, you know, do they see us as a model, or how do they...
No, they have, yes, I mean, well, certainly if I'm showing up, you know, in my capacity as from EFC, they're interested to learn about many of the green projects that have been done in this community and in this county. You know, people have varying views. You know, the thing that I've learned over the many years is it seems that sometimes people don't seem to kind of get out of their own community enough. So, you know, they're really focused many times in their own areas, the challenges they have. But by way of comparison, and particularly in the programs that I've just described, people are looking at Syracuse as a leader. Kansas City is another that comes to mind. If you look at two regions of the country that are, you know, really pioneers in this effort, it's the Syracuse-Onondaga County region and Kansas City, who is doing wonderful things in that. Nationally, I get an opportunity to speak at some of these events. I'm on the board of CIFA, and I actually was in Kansas City last year, and I had the local officials, you know, meet with me and discuss what's happened in Syracuse and what is New York State doing moving forward. Very interested in the Green Innovation Grant Program that we have. It's really a national leader, and we're picking up a lot of steam. And we're going to continue doing so. We actually just rolled our program into the governor's consolidated funding application. I mentioned the regional council exercise before. This is a very smart way of doing business, ladies and gentlemen. I have to tell you, when I was mayor, I recall, you know, reaching out to individual agencies and such, and you know, very kind of siloed New York State government. Now the governor has put everybody at one table. It's a single portal for an economic activity or an application that all agencies will view and share in. And so, you know, I've only given you, frankly, a snapshot of what's been provided to me to talk to you about today. But the dynamic of how the business is being done in New York State, operationally speaking, is changing greatly. And so there's a lot of opportunity there. I think the governor's got the brilliance of his plan is recognizing that there's some tough, heavy lifting when we talk about reform, but also how he modernizes agencies and kind of the business mentality of New York State. So a lot of promise.
Matt, first, welcome back. And I'm going to take you back from when you were not a former mayor, but when you and I sat on the council before. Because it's, as Yogi Berra would say, it's deja vu all over again. So you talked about the governor wants to address the issue of the schools and making sure that they have the evaluation as required, and he's going to stick to that. The state of New York was sued years ago, as you know, and by the big districts for the campaign for fiscal equity. And that was settled in court, and it affected our community a great deal. We still don't have anything that has been resulted, and I'm your years on the council and then as mayor, I think you can appreciate that. What can we do to get that settlement done, much like the governor wants to get these teacher evaluations taken care of?
Well, again, I'll go back to what I said before, is I think really getting an engaged community of New York State is very important. It really did happen last year for the first time in a good many years. The CFE, I mentioned some time ago, and look, I would argue that there is still work to be done in that area. There's no question about that. Conversely, when you talk about accountability measurements for districts, not just for teachers, but for administrators, and how are those tax dollars really spent, you know, is very important, and that needs to get done. One of my frustrations was when I was the mayor was that, you know, although I was obligated and, of course, would present a budget that the district would receive from the city, we had no line by line. So we were running successful accountability-based programs like CIRISTAT and others that proved, and they worked. There's no question, it's irrefutable. But we could not engage the district to partake fully in that exercise. And I think those are the types of new kind of tools that are available in this day and age that people need to take advantage of. So long-winded answer, Nader, which is that I think that's a very important step that needs to continue forward. The whole idea, the whole notion of how funding takes place in New York State, I am not speaking for Governor Cuomo here now. I want to make that clear. But if you're asking me on a personal level, I think that discussion certainly needs to continue, and it needs to be an engaged discussion by the people. And I don't think that it really was to the degree that it necessary in years past.
Matt, you had mentioned relative to the governor's budget that nothing's really off the table. And you were speaking about energy and water, so you know I got to put them all together and talk about hydrofracking and wanting to know, you know, what are the governor's thoughts relative to, I guess, using this as revenue. And obviously there's many folks around the state that are vehemently against hydrofracking.
There's no question, it's an emotional discussion. We've all seen that. But the governor's position has been clear from the onset. He is saying, I want to have all the information, all the data and the science before New York State makes a decision. He's still in that place. DEC, I work closely with Joe Martens. He sits next to me on my board. They're reviewing 50,000 comments that they received. So the governor's position is the same. There is no final decision. They want to make sure that they carefully review all the science and data and examples of perhaps what has happened in neighboring states with respect to hydrofracking. Here in this area, because of the filtration waiver, as you know, Syracuse has been carved out, as has been the New York City watershed. And in my kind of world, I work in that area as well, of course. We, you know, have a lot to do with the management of the New York City watershed through the Catskill region. But having said that, his positions remain the same.
The question that I was going to ask was exactly the one that was asked. So all I'll say is that when you're from Skaneateles, you tend to be very concerned, and probably more so than for any other subject. So what is the progress on this thing? When is the delay going to quit?
Well, Well, and that's the million-dollar question. Everybody wants to know when. I don't have an answer to the when. I don't know. I know that they're reviewing the 50,000 comments to date, and that the science and all of the kind of information gathering that they're doing continues. I just don't know when there'll be a conclusion to that process. One of the things, if you're from Skaneateles, that I think you should be proud of is the efforts that have taken place, to the city's credit, over the many years, and from the federal congressional members who really have instituted very strong policies and programs protecting the Skaneateles Lake watershed, in particular the nutrient runoff from the farming industries that surround that area. And so that is clearly a jewel of central New York, and every effort obviously will always be made to keep it that way.
Thank you, Matt Driscoll.
Thank you.